Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, as we continue from the Song of Songs, Pastor Jeremy brings us a message where we consider the value of names and shade. As always, for more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, stick around after the message. And now, let's head over to Pastor Jeremy.
So, good morning, South Harbor. My name's Jeremy. I'm one of the pastors here. Good to be with you this morning. We are, if you're newer with us, we are on week three of a sermon series on the book Song of Songs. And so, if you were here last week, we showed off a fancy, how many of you grabbed a devotional last week or this morning? These things, we're raising them in the air. I like it. It's like the Bible trivia thing back as a kid. So if you haven't grabbed one, we've got these Song of Songs devotionals. They're on tables just outside of the back doors. We would love for you to grab one of these. Inside, you've got sermon notes, so you could take it along. You can write down things that kind of jumped out at you, things that were meaningful for you. There are group guides, so if you're in kind of one of our small groups, you can go ahead and use that group guide in the group. There's some journals, both for if you're single, if you're in a space where you're dating, if you're in a space where you're married. We have three kind of separate journal prompts in the back of each week that allows you to kind of take the things that we talk about on Sunday and try to drive them a little bit deeper. And so if you don't have one, make sure you grab one. We do have kind of signs and a little like box right there. We do, just to help us offset the cost, they are around $10 each. And so if you could, there's a QR code on that sign or that little box right next to it, but make sure you grab one of these. And we're on week three, which means our hope was that something has kind of shifted in the last couple weeks as maybe you've thought about this series. It's actually been, it was a lot of fun telling people that we were going to do 12 weeks on Song of Songs, because you generally get kind of one of two responses, right? If you're newer with us at South, we spent about 40 weeks going through the book of Exodus. And once you start hitting like week 34, 35, people start asking the question, like, what are y'all going to do next? And it was a whole lot of fun to tell people like, oh, what we're going to do is a deep dive into Song of Songs. Because you'd get a response. Maybe you gave the response of like for real, what are you going to do? And then we'd double down and tell you like, oh no, like we're going to do this. And this might be one of the more relevant conversations we can have. And then you either laugh it off or you just like, you try really hard to take our word for it, right? Our hope is that at this point, a couple weeks into the series, that kind of like, are we really going to spend 12 weeks on Song of Songs, has almost started shifting in you to now you're asking the question like, why do more people not dive into this book? Because our hope is now you're not just taking our word for it, that like this is one of the more relevant conversations we can have, but now you're seeing why this is one of the more relevant conversations we can have. And so we are going to be diving in again today, and we're going to start exactly where we did the last 2 weeks. The opening of this song is gold. We're going to start there, and then we're going to kind of launch off from it and hit some other places of the book. But we're going to start again in Song of Songs, chapter 1, starting again at verse 1. So the author says, Solomon, Song of Songs. And then remember, we have three characters in the song. We have she, we have he, and we have a group of friends. So she starts off the song. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the young women love you. Take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers. So we talked when we started the series a couple weeks ago. We talked about how the song starts with attraction. And we talked about how this attraction, the song doesn't shy away from the fact that attraction is an integral part of the beginning of this relationship. The song holds it right out there. And so we talked when we started the series about how the song starts by naming that we are human. We live as human. We are not angels, which are these disembodied beings that do not have like attraction or desire. We're not that. But we're also not animals where we are just prone to have to give in to the impulses and the desires, but that God created us human, that attraction, that desire is not a bad thing, it's a good thing, but we are also not controlled by it. To be human is to have attraction and desire and also have the ability to control it, not be controlled by it. And so she starts by naming her attraction. But there's something in that attraction I want to highlight. So if we jump back to it, she says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. And then that next line, she says, pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the young women love you. That it's interesting to me that early in the song, she compares him with perfume. Why? That's a weird analogy, isn't it? Like, you are like perfume to me. Why would she use the comparison to perfume? Well, I want to show you a picture, kind of a satellite image of the nation of Israel. What color do you largely see? Brown. Right? It's brown, it's tan. How much water do you see in the image? Like, you've got the Mediterranean off on the west, so like that's a large body of water. But if you live in Israel, your water supply is really quite small. You've got the Sea of Galilee, which is really quite little. Tim and I, we have the opportunity to lead trips over to Israel, and pretty much every time you stand on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, the response is the same. Like, I thought it was going to be a whole lot bigger. You have the Sea of Galilee, you have the Jordan River down to the Dead Sea. But for the most part, to live in ancient Israel, especially the time of this song, you do not have access. Largely, you do not have access to an abundance of water. It's very different than living here in Michigan. If we go to a satellite map of Michigan, what color do you see? Green. It's green. It's blue. We have water everywhere, right? A lot of you live on water. There's water everywhere. I actually wondered this week, I did a Google search. I've got a trivia, Michigan trivia question, South Harbor edition this morning. I asked Google the question, in the state of Michigan, you are never more than X number of miles away from a body of water. Think lake, think river, think pond. Okay, in the state of Michigan, at any point in the state of Michigan, you are never more, how many of you think A, 3 miles from water? How many B, 6 miles? C, 15. D, 25. Oh, nobody says 25. All right, well done. You've lived in Michigan for a while. The answer, in the state of Michigan, you are never more than 6 miles away from a body of water. So put yourself in the ancient world. Did you know that deodorant wasn't invented until like 1888? What a time to be alive, right? Something happens when temperatures, Israel is hot. Michigan can get hot. Something happens to humans when the temperature gets hot. We stink, right? We stink. This is what happens. I've got a freshman son. He plays freshman football, and he plays receiver. So he's got these receiver gloves. Anybody ever see these like football receiver gloves? So he was wearing them for the last couple months of football, and then he came home last week and he's like, "Hey, one of the fingers ripped out. Like his finger popped through the side." So he needed new gloves, and so he put his gloves on the counter. And my wife and I kid you not. The next like 3 days, every time you'd walk past this section of our house, it smelled like something had died. Like I grew up in Overijssel. Anybody know where Over? It's like this, it's in the middle of a cornfield. But like my parents always had this weird issue growing up where like a mouse would fall in the wall and die and it would just smell for 3 days. Anybody ever have this? I thought there was a dead animal in our house. We were trying to figure out where this thing was, and we realized like every time we walk past this one spot, it just smells like death. Football receiver gloves, awful. Something happens when it gets hot, you smell. Do you know the shower wasn't a part of regular daily life until like the 1920s or 1950s? Like, If we think the world is getting worse, like I present to you the shower, right? But what happens in the ancient world prior to the 1880s with deodorant or the 1920s with the shower, what you would do if you're living in Michigan, what you're going to do is you're going to find some sort of body of water. You're going to try to bathe, get the dirt off from you. In the ancient world, especially in ancient Israel, when there is not an abundance of water, literally the water you would have in ancient Israel, the water you have, you need to save to drink. It'll rain for 3 months. It'll then be dry for the next 9. And so in those 3 months, literally, you would build your village in ancient Israel. So you would like slope your roofs towards what you would call a cistern. It's like a hole in the ground that would collect all the water because you and your family and your neighbors, your community, needs that water to drink for the rest of the year. You don't have an excess amount of water in order to bathe, in order to clean. And so what would happen is in ancient Israel, when it gets hot and you do what humans do, you start to smell, right? You probably use a little bit of water to cleanse. And then what you're going to do is you're going to use like a perfume to cover. Does this make sense? It's what middle school locker rooms still do today, right? It's a little bit of water and a whole lot of Axe body spray, right? But we actually find perfume as part of like normal daily hygiene all the way back. We found this vase. You can actually see this in the Israel Museum in Jerusalem. This thing dates back to 3,000 to 3,500 BC. This was a part of life. The Corinthians in the city of Corinth, where Paul would write the letter of Corinthians, they actually had like their own like custom perfume and their own custom jars that they would use this to cover so that when you smell, you then have something that you're able to cover. Perfume was a part of normal daily hygiene. But do you notice in the song, remember she's speaking at this point, what she says has this aroma like perfume. I want to put the verse back up. She says, "Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes, your name is like perfume poured out." So what does she say is like perfume? His name. Now, I think it's important that we camp out here for just a little bit because in her world, in their world, your name was way more than just like your calling card, right? Like your name was way more than just the thing they always misspell on your Starbucks cup, right? Like it's Jeremy, it's not Jeremy, how many times? But your name is more than just the thing they misspell. Your name in their world, it largely represented your character. It was your reputation. It was your identity. It was who you are. And I think this part of the song is so incredibly important, especially I think for us today. I think this part of the song actually serves as maybe a necessary warning to a lot of us today. Because remember, this song is largely written from the perspective of like, it's an older couple who are looking back on their relationship and they're singing this song about this thing that developed between them. And I think this serves as such an important warning that especially if you're here and you're single, or especially if you're here and like you're in kind of the early part of a dating relationship. So all you single ladies, right? And single guys too, you can pay attention. Or if you're early in dating, one of the things that we find is this couple looking back, she says, what I was attracted to in him, or what I was attracted to was, yes, I was attracted to him, to like, there was this physical attraction, but it was more than just that. She says, what I was also attracted to was his name, was who he was his character, his identity, his reputation. I was attracted to him physically, but I also was attracted to his name. And I think this serves as an important warning for us. Because I think, I want to let you in on a little secret. So especially if you're kind of single or dating, a little secret. Often what can happen is when you start, especially if you're single and looking at dating or you're dating, there's something that can happen in that you start kind of spending time with somebody, right? You kind of start hanging out. Maybe you go on a couple dates. And there's this thing that happens is that you often don't kind of present who you actually are. You kind of present who you think the other person wants you to be. Does this make sense? We've seen this happen. Like you try, like you're early in this relationship and they are absolutely perfect, right? Everything is perfect. Maybe because they are, but maybe because they want to be liked, because we all want to be liked, right? And so there's this tendency, I think, to put on this face, to put on this front, to be not necessarily who you are, but who you think they want you to be. And then there's the problem that can happen, that if you get too connected too quick, if you start falling for them too fast, what happens is as the relationship progresses, you start to get to know a little bit more who they really are, right? You start to actually learn their name. And if you've not heard the warning of the song that she was attracted and she knew his name, what can happen is we can start making excuses, right? Well, they were great at the beginning. Maybe it'll just go back. Well, maybe it's because fill in the blank that this couple give this warning. Make sure you get to know their name. As she then continues in the song, and she says, nobody posts on their dating profile this, right? Sometimes moody, often forgets to do the dishes, prone to hangry meltdowns, right? This isn't what you present to the world. This is the thing you kind of find out later, right? And so she says, before you get too involved, before you get too committed, make sure you know their name. She then goes a little bit further in that next verse. She says, pleasing is fragrance to your perfumes. Your name is like a perfume poured out. So not only is his name like perfume, but his name is like perfume poured out. Anybody ever kind of fumble a cologne or a perfume container like I have before and shatter it? Perfume poured out, you can't hide, right? And so she's naming that who he is, who this person is behind closed doors and in public. He is exactly the same person. That it's not one person when we're out with the friends, or it's not one person when we're over here. And then when we come back, like when it's just us, he flips into somebody else. He's consistent. He's constant. His name is true to who he actually is. And so she gives the warning that before you give your heart away, before you get too close, make sure you learn their name. And then she goes a little bit further. She says, my beloved is to me a sachet of myrrh resting between my breasts. See, one of the things you would do if you're wanting to kind of cover kind of your natural odor is you could kind of slightly rinse and use perfume. But another thing that especially women in the ancient world would do is you would take like a sachet or a pouch. In that sachet or pouch, you'd put some kind of spices, some aromatics, and then you would wear it like a necklace and you would wear it close to your skin. And then what would happen, so women would wear this during the day, they would even wear this to bed, and what would happen is kind of your natural body heat would kind of activate those spices, those aromatics, and you would actually give off this pleasing aroma. And so what she's saying is not only is his name like a perfume poured out, not only is his character consistent, but he also brings out the best in me. Like, he actually covers me. He brings out the very best things in me. He amplifies and helps bring out. So for you, if you're single, looking towards dating, if you're dating, the warning, make sure you get to know their name. And then the question for each and every one of us that I know I've been kind of wrestling with in the song, one of the questions I think for all of us is, what is your name? What's your name? Who are you? What is your character like? What is your reputation? A question that I always think is a helpful question is think through how you would answer this. What is your name? How would you actually identify yourself? What are the things that are the most important to you? What is your name? And then the question, if I were going to ask the people closest to you the same question, how do they respond? If I were to ask your significant other, your closest friends, your family, like if I were to ask them, what is your name? What is their response? Is your name like a perfume poured out? You are the same, you are consistent, you are constant. Or is there maybe a gap? And if there's a gap, I wonder if some of the work that we can do is trying to write that gap, right? Try to overlap those circles. Who are you? What is your name? Because for her in the song, he's good to her, but what we find is he's also good for her. There's this beautiful banter that'll actually happen in the next chapter, in Song of Songs chapter 2. Like, anybody ever, like, middle school, like, you send, like, the notes across the classroom to one another, right? Like, there's kind of this, like, this banter between her and him, between she and he in chapter 2, and I actually think it's quite beautiful. In chapter 2, she says, "I am a rose of Sharon, a lily among the valleys." And then he right away jumps in and he says, "Like a lily among thorns is my darling among the young women." Do you see it? Like she says, I'm like a rose. And he says, "Oh no, you're not like just like you are like a rose among thorns. There is nobody like you." And then she goes further. She speaks again. She says, "Like an apple tree among the forest is my beloved among the young men." He's not just like another tree. He's a tree that brings fruit. He's a tree that's pleasing. He is way more than all of the other trees. And then she says something that I find absolutely fascinating. She says this. She says, "I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. Let him lead me to the banquet hall and let his banner over me be love." Now there's a piece in this part of the song that I find absolutely fascinating. And that what she says here is she says, "I delight to sit in his shade." And now on the one hand, she might still just be playing that tree analogy. But I think if we just kind of minimize it to that, I think we miss so much of what she's doing in these words. Because remember, if you were here last week, we talked about how she had this deep-seated insecurity, that she had things that she liked about herself, but at her core, when she looked at who she was, there was a thing that she liked, but she had this thing that she felt made her unlovable, that she felt made her less beautiful or less wanted or less attractive, that statement we looked at from her last week, let's put it back up. She said, "Dark am I, yet lovely, daughters of Jerusalem." And then she says, "Do not stare at me because I am dark, because I am darkened by the sun." So remember last week we talked about how in her world, to be pale-skinned, to be lighter, means you were not... To work in the sun, to have darker skin, meant you were a manual laborer. You were out in the fields. You were doing the manual work. That in her world, that she believed made her less attractive, less wanted, less beautiful. That in her world, to have a pale skin, to be protected from the sun, she said, that is what makes you beautiful. So she says, "When I look at myself, dark am I yet lovely. There's the thing I like, but there's also this thing that every time I look at myself, I just want to hide. Don't even look at me because of it." And then notice what she says of him. What is the thing that causes her greatest insecurity? The heat of the sun. And now she's looking at him and saying, "I delight to sit in his shade. In my space of deepest insecurity, he provides cover. In the thing that I am most concerned about in my appearance, in my being worth something, he stands in the way and he provides shade. He provides protection for me. I find this to be absolutely beautiful. that in the moment of her deepest insecurity, he stands and provides cover, he provides shade, he provides protection. Which then I think causes us to ask the question, especially if you're here and you're in a relationship. I think what we can do, one of the questions is, are your words, are your actions, the way that you're living, are we providing shade for those around us? Or are we adding to the noise? Are we adding to those insecurities? Because the reality is, it's often in those relationships, whether a significant other or a close group of friends, the people that you let in, right? We have the ability, I think, to either provide protection, to provide shade, to provide cover, or when you actually know somebody, you also have the ability to speak in and say some of the most hurtful, cutting words possible. Which one do we do? Which one do you do? Parents, I think this is so incredibly important, right? Because if you're here and you have kids, your kids will be more shaped by you than anybody else in their entire lives. As you think about what it looks like to be a parent, and a lot of, like, are you parenting in a way where your words, your actions are providing shade, they're providing cover, they're providing protection, they're speaking against the untruths in the world and reminding your kids of who they really are, of what's really important? Or are your words adding to the noise? Are they cutting down? Are they growing those insecurities? Which one are you doing? Which one are we doing? She says, his name is like this perfume poured out. His character is constant. It's consistent. He is who he is. And who he is, she says, brings out the best in me and provides protection and shade in the places where I most need it. How are you doing? How are we doing? See, for us, this is a question not only of how you exist in the relationships that you're in, but we're also asking the question, like, how can we, at the heart of who we are here at South as the church, how can we continue to be a place that is also offering that is speaking shade, that is speaking protection, that is speaking against all of the noise and the lies that our world throws at us, but is reminding us of what is the most important thing? What is true of you? Who are you? Who are we? How can we provide protection and shade for one another? And so last week, we actually invited you to come here during the week and to sit under the hoopah. Remember this structure, if you're newer with us, this is called a hoopah. It's got a covering, which essentially it kind of traces back to God meeting his people at Mount Sinai, and God comes down and covers the mountain. And so the hoopah is a reminder that, like, we are all under this protection and the cover of God. And what we invited you to do is to come here to spend some time to write some letters for kind of the younger generation, for those who are coming, that are kind of coming up after us. And really, what we were inviting you to do is to write letters of protection, to write letters of shade, to write letters, again, speaking against the untruths that our world so often yells at us, and to remind us, to remind our younger people, to remind the next generation of what is true. And so what we want to do this morning is I'm going to invite Pastor Abby. Pastor Tim, he's preaching at Jamestown Harbor this morning, so he can't be with us. But one of the things we want to do is we want to actually take some of your words. If you signed your name on it, we're not going to read your name. We won't give away the details. But one of the things we want to be as a community is a community that continues to provide that shade, that protection, that cover to remind you of who you are. And so we want to even take some of your words, words that you spent under the hoopah praying, asking God for, and then writing down for the next generation. We want to read some of these words over you. So these are some of your words of shade, of protection over one another. I'll start. Hey, you. I just want you to know that I believe in you. Sometimes school and friendships are hard. You have what it takes to get through it. You are brave. You are caring because you are made in the image of Christ. You have a purpose on this earth to spread your joy. You make those around you smile because you are incredible. You are unique. Keep discovering and telling yourself why you are.
You are beautiful in the eyes of God. Even though the world wants you to look a certain way, true beauty comes from the inside. So just remember that God created you in the image of his own son. You all are his children, and you all are beautiful.
I'm not sure what your secret is. You're too big for God problem, but I promise you that whatever it is, God is not here to add to your shame. You are not too much for him. You are enough. If all you have is 5 loaves, he can work with that. If all you have is 2 fish, he can work with that. If all you have is a tiny smoldering hope, he can work with that. He loves you, and he has an incredible story for you.
This we will promise you. We will never stop loving you completely, fully, unconditionally. We will call to the surface what is true about you, that God made you with great love and care. This world can be hard and ugly and scary, but do not let it steal your joy and innocence.
You are God's great creation. Even on days when you forgot that he has a plan for you, that you are beautiful, that he loves you, that he has a purpose for you to use your gifts, your talents, your creativity, your intellect. Be kind to yourself. Love yourself. Talk lovingly to yourself because you are loved.
I want you to know that your worth is not found in what you look like, what you achieve, or how others see you. Your worth is already secure because you are a beloved child of God. The culture around us often whispers and sometimes shouts that you are not enough, that you must do more or be more to matter. But Jesus tells a different story. You are fearfully and wonderfully made.
You are enough. There's nothing you can do, nothing that might happen to you, no decision or anything in this life that can change that, because the one who is unchanging has said it is so. And he has chosen you as his simply because he made you, and he doesn't make mistakes. You are kind, smart, funny, beautiful inside and out, and so, so loved. You are wanted and cherished and interesting and unique and seen for you. But you are right now, be who you are right now and trust that God will meet you there. He always does. There is no too tall, too short, too skinny, too chubby, too anything really when it comes to his creation. There's just you, an image bearer, a masterpiece, a beloved child, and that is just right.
It sometimes feels like trying to convince you of how we see you is an impossible task. There are so many voices who will tell you that you are not enough. At some point, you will almost certainly believe some of them, or many of them. They will tell you who you are not and what you are not. But we see you for who you are, and who you are is incredible.
Your words over you. Speaking against the noise, against the lies, reminding you as shade, as cover, of what is really true of who you are, that you are enough, you are loved. You can hear those refrains that come up in the letter. If we're honest, if you're like me, I know that the language that I often tell myself has a different refrain, right? But when you sat down, when we as the church sat down under the huppah, and ask God to give us words to speak over one another, to speak words over our kids. Often, those similar refrains, you are enough, you are loved, you are beautiful because of who you are. We want to be a community where that's true of one another. And so one of the things, if you've not caught yet, we're trying in this series to kind of do some things that are a little bit extra to maybe push us out of our comfort zone. One of them this week was come here during the week and sit under the hoopah and write a letter to those who are coming after you. And what we want is, first, there were more letters than what we were able to read. A number of you came out. And so on the one hand, we want to leave the space open for you. And so we told you that our doors this week were open from 9 to 3. They'll continue to be open from 9 to 3. If you're ever in a spot during the series where you want to come out and do some work, maybe it's something about character, identity, who you are. Maybe there's something you're wrestling with, something you need to let go of, you need to walk away from. We want to leave this space open for you. If you want to write a letter to, if you want to write another letter like we just read, if you want to write a letter to your own soul, to your own self, this space is, if you just want to come here and do some work in prayer, this space is open to you. But then also what we want to do today is we want to continue to speak words of truth, words of blessing over one another. And so in just a few minutes, we're actually going to invite half of you to stand and to speak a blessing over the rest of the room. That what we're going to do is we talked last week about how there are all these lies that we fall into, especially as kind of men and women. And so in just a few moments, I'm going to invite all of the guys, young, old, in between, to stand. And then for you women, as you're seated, to kind of put yourself in a posture to receive some words of blessing that the men in the room are then going to speak over you. And then we'll have the men sit down, and Abby will invite the women to stand and do the same, speaking words of blessing over the men. And so if you're here and you're with somebody, you're with a significant other, if you're standing saying blessing, feel free to put a hand on a shoulder, on a back, do whatever you want to. But what I want to invite is if you are a guy in the room, would you stand? Oh, let's go. So guys, young, old, in between, and then I'm going to put some words of blessing on the screen. So women, do whatever you need right now to be in a spot where you can receive the words that the men in this room are going to speak over you right now. And then men, would you recite these words of truth, of blessing over the women in the space? Women of God, your value does not come from the opinions of others. You are not defined by how the world sees you. You are not measured by the size of your body, the smoothness of your skin, or the approval of anyone's gaze. You are not only as valuable as your reflection in the mirror or the comments whispered behind your back. You are more than enough. You are radiant in God's image. May you know a beauty that runs deeper than appearances. Your worth was set before the foundations of the world. You are handcrafted in the image of God. You are clothed with dignity and strength. May you walk in freedom from comparison. May you stand tall in the truth of your belovedness. May you find shade in God's love and courage to be shade for others. May you know you are loved as you are, without condition, without measure, forever enough.
All right, men, you may be seated. And women, it's your turn if you would stand. And so, men, as you sit down, whatever you need to do in this space to be able to receive these words, whether it's closing your eyes or looking down, just receive these words. And then, women, we will read along. Men of God, your identity is not tied to your job title or the size of your paycheck or the success of your projects. The world will try to tell you that you are only as good as what you can produce. You are not only as valuable as the hours you work or the ground you till. Your identity is not your output. Your Father calls you son, beloved, chosen, whole. May you know that the freedom of being loved, not for what you do, but for who you are. May you carry strength that brings protection, words that bring life, and presence that brings peace. May your legacy be faith. May your character be steady. And may your name be a fragrance of grace wherever you go.
Women, you may be seated. It's our hope that the words that we read over you, the words that you just spoke over one another, that these words would sink in somewhere deep in your soul, that you would believe in all of the other words that you tell yourself, that you would be able to reject those and cling to what is really true of you. And I think it's fitting that this morning we actually get to end our time together, gathering around the table, because really this is the message of this table, right? Of communion, of kind of this Last Supper, that it's at the table we're reminded that despite what you've done, despite where you've gone, the decisions you've made, what life has looked like, when God looks at you, God says, you are my child. And whatever has happened, you are worth everything. That Jesus in this table says, you are worth him laying his life down for, because that is exactly what he did. And so in so many ways, this table is a way of us kind of leaning in the protection and the shade, the reality, the identity, the truth that God says of each and every one of us. And so we're going to kind of close our time together around the table for communion, remembering again what is most true of you, that you are worth dying for, that Jesus gave his life for you. And so the way we do communion here at South Harbor is we have a few tables here in the front. And so in just a few moments, Abby and I will speak some words over this table. And then we have kind of four tables up in the front. We've got two right here on these aisles and two on the sides. If you're somebody who prefers a gluten-free option, those are going to be at the corner tables. And so after we kind of speak some words at this table, we'll invite you to come forward and to take. But at Jesus' Last Supper, the night he was betrayed, Jesus took bread and he broke it and said,
For more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org or find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings, you can find our service streamed live at 8:45 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube. And so from all of us here at South Harbor Church and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you a blessed week.